Welcome to the Shonen Geek, the Shonen Geek and Fast Fret podcast. Done.
Well done. Okay, we're gonna use that. I see your postings all the time. So there's sometimes you're out playing just you, right? But then you're all also accompanying a number of different artists in your area of Canada.
Yeah.
So what's all that stuff?
Sometimes I'll do solo acoustic shows, and that's usually more bar shows, pub shows.
Yeah.
I call them working gigs.
Yeah.
And then those are fun.
But like, what do you do with that? Like, I'm curious because I haven't seen you play that way. So are you picking like, okay, I'm going to do three sets. Is it one of those kinds of shows? Or you got like a 30 minute set and that's it? Or like, what is it?
No, it's usually depends on the venue, but like those kind of shows are generally like three sets, 3:45s, 3 1-hours. It kind of depends. Sometimes it's 2:50s in a short 20-minute set. Depends on the venue. Like I'm playing in Banff tomorrow night, and it's a Tuesday night, but it's Banff. There's tons of tours, so it's gonna be busy.
Yeah.
And so that first set at 10 o'clock is important because
the last set would be less important, the least important on Tuesday night, I would think.
Yeah. 1 o'clock, there's no one there. Right. It's the least amount of people. So it's not as you want to.
So song selection, how do you put that together?
I wait and see. Well, it depends. If I already know the crowd, if I already know who's going to be there, age demographic, you know, if I'm really going to go out and stereotype, then I kind of wait. Now that said, I have a generic first set template, second set template, third set template, based on the more common model of you know, the first set is usually earlier.
Yep.
Second set, people are, you know, and third set, or the party tunes and all that kind of thing, as you know, typical bar band thing. But that doesn't always work. So then I got to shift things around. I rarely have a set list in order. I'll usually kind of, again, I have groupings of first set grouping, second set grouping, third, and they really only just mean like intensity level, I guess. So then I'll just look around the crowd. And if I see half is again, it's 7:30 and half of the crowd is 45 to 65. All right, well, then I know what I'm going to pull. If I see there's a good mix. So I try. The other thing I try.
This is a 90s set, or this is an 80s set, or whatever.
Yeah, I'll try in that first set, I'll try and sprinkle a little bit of what I do around. So they know, even though, so let's say if Grandpa hears me play a Green Day song, he knows that chances are, because I also played a Hank Williams song, I might play something else he likes.
Yeah.
And the 28-year-old who heard me play something that he likes, but then just heard me play a Hank Williams song, might want to stick around because I might play something else he likes. Yeah. I try and kind of and also feel the room out. The amount of times I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna hit it with this, so they're gonna love this.
It's like dead.
It's like nothing. It's like, well, I guess this doesn't work right now. I'll stick with something else, you know. Like I just played one of the Fairmont hotels, like the fancy hotel here in Calgary. So it's tourists, right? It's, there's no one from Calgary here.
Yep.
And so I remember the first time I played there, I kind of forgot, and I kind of went into the normal Calgary Fair of set list that works. And even the Canadian, you know, the CanCon stuff doesn't go over as much as you think it does.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of them are American tourists. They're from Europe. They're from, they don't care who the
They got music in Canada?
They don't, you know. So it all kind of depends. So that's what I'll do. I'll throw a few different types of noodles to the wall and see what sticks and what doesn't. And then that helps me kind of gauge what I'm going to do. Sometimes you're kind of expected to just be a fly on the wall, and sometimes you're expected to push sales and to get people going.
Yeah.
So they're all kind of different.
I was always curious how you always built your set. So when you're playing with other people, is there a consistent regular? Cause I've seen a couple names pop up, and like, I think I've seen that name before. Or are you just kind of like, I need somebody to play lap steel or whatever.
No, I try and keep the same consistent people.
Okay.
If my number ones aren't available and their sub, like the number one sub isn't available, then I usually bail.
Yeah.
There's no point in just limping in. I'd rather go do it. Offer a different show. If it was a full band and we can't find a drummer, I'd rather offer a duo, or if it's a duo and I can't do it, always a single, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The advantage of going with a single, I just go myself, it's a lot more work, and I'd be lying if I say I prefer it over playing with either a duo or a band, because it's not as much fun. The only thing that is kind of cool is that you're not linked to specific sets or songs that the other person knows.
Yeah.
Right. So you guys have known me for a long time. You can imagine that I have, you know, lots of different kinds of songs in my head that if someone requested, and if I could quickly just go look at the lyrics, right. Okay, sure. I'll play that for you. Yeah. I can do that a lot quicker. Right. You have a better chance of me whipping out a Madonna tune or, a Beyonce tune. Again, same thing. Versus if I'm there with two other people and we're like, oh, geez, well, no, she wants
to. What do you know? Do you know this one? No, I don't know this one. Do you know this one? No, do you know?
You're going through all that.
You can't improvise as easily.
When I'm by myself, I can go through all the 90s tunes that I learned when I was young and I still remember. I can go through all the 80s stuff that I know. I can go through all the 70s stuff. I can go through so many different kinds of music and not have to worry about if the other person knows or not. It might not always be perfect. And I find when you're a solo, people actually kind of enjoy that. Oh, look, he tried that out.
Yeah.
He messed up the chord, but he got this part right. You know, where if you're a band and you do that, and then you're not following each other, and then I find people don't find it as cool.
Especially if it's a hip song, and you get it wrong. Like, you're not allowed to get a hip song wrong. Like, sorry.
Exactly.
You know, people are like, oh, yeah, they like the hip, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so they're usually different. And then if I'm playing with different people, if I'm just playing electric guitar, those gigs there, generally it's a set. It's a certain show. It's a set gig.
Yeah.
There's no improv.
But you're doing some shows where it's just you're not the headliner, and there's like three bands playing, so you're playing like a 30-minute set or something. You're doing a bunch of those too.
Oh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which do you prefer? Do you prefer – now, are you playing original material, or is it just covers on one of those shows?
Well, it depends. On some of the artists I back up, it's originals, and those are usually shorter. I prefer those. I prefer – if I had my way, I would play good original music to pack houses every night. Yeah. But unfortunately, that's really hard to come by, to find the artist that can do that, to connect with that artist, for them to find you. It's not that easy. But so I prefer to play original music, hands down. But there's less and less and less nowadays, and I find people are less and less interested, unfortunately, especially like in a general public. I'm not saying like at a ticketed event or if you're having
yeah, yeah.
event, but I find that like now in the older days, you could sneak in your, I could find you could sneak in cover, your originals into your cover show.
Yeah.
You could, people were more open to that, you know, but I find now if people are going to listen to covers, they want to listen to covers. If people are going to dance, they want to dance. They're not as open. The cover crowd I'm talking about, they're not as open to original music, which is kind of weird, but hey, that's what they want to listen to and that's what they want to hear. So I tend to play more cover music for paying bills, I guess, to make money.
Yep.
But I definitely do back up some original artists and I like it more, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. When people are dancing and they have the song in their head and they can move to the song if they know it. When it's an original one, you'll have changes and they'll be like, oh, okay.
Well, see, and that's the problem. It's not that they don't like original music. It's like that they just went out to go listen to melodies that they're familiar with. They want to go sing along to, like, karaoke is bigger than it's ever been. And I never thought that would ever happen.
Oh, you know, it's huge.
So that when people go out, like, so for example, this happens often, but this is just on St. Paddy's Day when I was playing. We were playing this show, I have this duo called 506. So that's the area code for New Brunswick. So we kind of market the whole thing as we're East Coasters, and you know, there's obviously lots out here. And so for St. Paddy's Day, we fit in very well. So so we're singing along mid song, and there's no stage, which I hate. So the people dancing are level to you.
Yeah, right in your area.
Yeah. So mid song, guy leans over. You know, early 20s, partying, having a time of his, you know, time of his life. And he's like, hey, man, can I sing a song with you? And I was like, no, sir, you can't, you know. And he's like, what? I was like, no, you can't. I was like, it's not karaoke. I was like, well, you can request a song. And then, you know, again, I don't know who this person is.
Well, yeah.
He's loaded. I'm not bringing him up on stage.
And you're going to touch my gear?
Well, and it's not even that. We have a full dance floor. Do you think the bar is interested in taking a risk and us like clearing that dance floor because you can't sing? I don't even know if you can sing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anyhow, long story short, he was so appalled. He was so surprised I was not letting him up to sing, because I think everyone just has that mentality that entertainment's karaoke now.
That's it. That's exactly it. So, there was actually.
So back to defending those people. I think people just, when people want to go out and dance and sing music that they know and they like, they don't like it when that shifts. And like you were saying, there's a punch they weren't expecting, and there's a tempo change that they didn't know was coming. Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's but
there was a band here. I'm trying to remember what they were called, but what they would do is they were a live band, and what they would do is they would go and they would host karaoke night, but instead of karaoke being piped in with, you know, really shitty sounding like keyboards or whatever, it was actually the band playing the song.
Yeah.
And then people would step up and their repertoire was ridiculous. I'm trying to remember what they were called, but they could play anything like on the drop of do you know, blah, blah, blah. Yep. And then, you know, and then they would literally do karaoke. Like it was kind of a cool concept, and that they used to pack the house. Cause you kidding me? Do be able to do karaoke with a live band? Like that's cooler.
I remember that was happening. And I remember someone asked me to actually join a band like that. They're like, Danny, would you be interested in doing that? And I was like, well, that would be kind of cool, I guess. Like learn so many different kinds of songs. And then they gave me this like massive song list to learn.
Of course.
Of course. Right. Like, it sounds great. And then they gave me this massive song, and it's got to be note for note.
Yep.
There's no winging. There's no jamming, right?
Because the singer has to be able to follow, and the singer is not going to be a professional singer.
Exactly like they've heard a gazillion times, mm-hmm. right? And then I started doing all that, and then I was looking at how much they want to pay, because at the end it is karaoke. They're not charging tickets like that much. You know what I mean? Like, so I was like, no, that's not worth it. Because the amount of work you have to do.
Yeah. And nobody sees that though. That's the thing. Nobody recognizes the work that you would have to put into it, or pays accordingly to the amount of work.
And don't forget, you'd have to constantly keep changing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you do have a built-in crowd that keeps going, they're not going to want to hear the same songs all the time.
That's right.
So your list of songs, and just because you haven't played that one in a month doesn't mean that you can't, oh, I want to do this song tonight.
Yep.
Oh, shoot, I haven't gone over that, you know, friggin' song, you know, whatever it is in a month, you know, like, I think that's probably why you don't see this pop. I think they were running into the problems that musicians are human, and there's only so much. It's so much easier and cheaper just to program a backing track.
Yep, for sure.
What a guy I know here in town is doing, I think maybe he's found a way around it, is instead of having a full band, he does it with an acoustic guitar.
Okay.
And he gives you the list you can pick from.
Yeah, okay.
And that's it. Now, again, because...
And he probably has the tab in front of him in case, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's well, even if he doesn't, you can just go online and go look at other singing chord, you know, like that gives you lyrics with the chord on top, and you can get through it. Enough for karaoke. Enough for karaoke.
Yep.
Right? So it's still around. It is a great idea. At least it gives some little bit of organic life to karaoke. But anyway, I don't know why we're talking about karaoke this much.
Well, I've got my topic wheel in front of me here that we could have pulled from, and this is probably what we're talking about is probably better than what we get on there.
Well, there's one that's it's probably on there, but we should probably talk about it anyway.
Which one?
Overvalued or undervalued? $300 million.
Oh boy! Oh, that's a good topic. Okay, well, you got to give Todd the history lesson on it a little bit because he might not know anything about it.
It's not nearly that much of a history lesson. Basically, Kiss followed suit, as you probably saw.
Oh yeah,
and they sold their catalog of music, like a lot of older artists are doing. They realize they can't take it with them, so they sold their entire catalog and makeup rights.
Yep.
Everything, the name, the whole thing,
the makeup
for $300 million.
Wow.
And who did they sell it to?
You can't be happy with $300 million. You have a problem.
Well, to me, the company that bought them got a great deal, and that also tells me because if just the music, yeah, that's overpaying. But the whole thing, that's the show. That's again all the makeup, so you can sell. You don't have to put a show on. You can just sell stuff and make money off that.
Yeah, just sell merch.
I'm guessing that Gene has they're making royalties still. There's no way that it's like I'm never making another penny off of all this.
No, it's probably like we get 50% royalties now. But the thing is, they don't have to put the effort in. This company will put the effort in the promotion of the new Kiss casket or the new Kiss condom or the new
exactly.
But it won't be Kiss money going into any of this. It'll be this company's money going into it, and then. You know, it's just like when we make t-shirts off TeePublic, we don't have to do anything. If someone buys a t-shirt, we don't have to print it. We don't have to ship it. We don't have to, you know, advertise. Like, it's all done entirely by that company. And the company that did it, Todd, is the same company who did the ABBA hologram, whatever. Because you can go in England and you can go watch ABBA play in holograms in a specific theater with all the right projection units and all that sort of stuff and watch ABBA as if it was 1970. So that company is who bought Kiss, the company who does the ABBA thing.
Yeah.
So is this their entertainment company? Like Disney bought out Lucasfilms type thing? It's like,
the point is to keep it going. The point is to the same reason why when Lucasfilm sold his, it wasn't just to make money. He also wanted to make sure they were going to keep making and keep developing the story, right? So it's the same thing. It was to make sure they could have just sold just the music, but then it doesn't go anywhere. Who's going to push it, right? No one cares. But this way here, they can still put on the show. And then so therefore the music still
goes. And the Avatar concerts that they're talking about, right? Because they're going to have... They're going to have holographic concerts with their likeness, but now Kiss doesn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But I think they still have input too, I think, but.
Yeah, I would say be very minimal. And the thing is too, is now they can just do other things. Like I was just thinking about that too. Okay. So now like Gene's doing he's doing like a solo tour in like South America, right? Yeah. It's like the Gene Simmons band. He announced that like right after they did the last show of Massive Garden, he announced these shows. So he's had this planned out for a long time.
Oh, hell he has. He's like,
Kiss retired, but now, so what is he paying the guys on stage? $500 a night, tops, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, probably charging $500,000 a night, putting it all in his pocket, you know what I mean? Like,
but I think he also.
No big deal to worry about anymore. But small show.
He doesn't have to worry about Paul.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I don't know. Working with Paul sounds really complicated.
It was just so back to my question, undervalued or overvalued?
What do you think, Todd?
In the beginning, I was thinking it was because Dylan's been selling his, sold his, and then Neil Young, didn't he just sell his, seems to me?
That might be right.
Am I making a, someone else just did too. You're seeing it, older people are selling it because they're realizing.
And Motley Crue didn't they?
There's no more money in music. What's that?
Oh, no, wait. Motley Crue bought theirs, didn't they?
Yeah, they own theirs. Yeah. But anyhow, so I was just thinking $300 million. When I first saw it, I was thinking, oh my God, who paid them that much money for music that doesn't play on the radio?
Yeah.
And then as you read, it's like, oh, the whole
everything.
Thing. I was like, that's not really all that much when you really think about it. Because I mean, just and that's all the music rights. So they can license it to movies, they can license it to friggin' beer commercials, they can license it to whatever.
But they license the image too, so it'll be rock and roll all night, but you'll get to see Fat Gene singing, you know, his avatar singing with his wig on. You know, they can have that. They don't just have to have the song. So if it's not just going to be a song in a movie, it's going to be, you'll see Gene Simmons on a TV screen in a movie singing rock and roll all night. Like, so they can actually have that whole experience. So Todd, what's your overvalued, undervalued? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I've never tried to value that type of thing, but you're saying it's music they don't play on the radio really anymore. I mean, that was this whole persona of Kiss. I mean, they've retired, I don't know how many times, and I don't know how many retirement tours they've had, but like you said, they're getting to the point now where it's like, you know what? Everybody's voices are starting to go. And I mean, people are getting older. They're not as nimble as they used to be. Although Gene, I don't know, he just keeps going like the Energizer Bunny. So he's a different kind of animal, but I don't know, that's a lot of money. Now I'm assuming that includes not just the original members. I'm sure that also includes all the, like when Peter Criss was replaced, when Ace Frehley was replaced, like all those other egos.
Absolutely. Everything.
Ace still gets publishing. I know that.
Yeah, he didn't sell his publishing. He just sold his makeup rights. That's all he sold.
Yeah. I'm just going.
Is he still part of the?
Oh no,
his royalties? No.
Well,
no.
Songwriting,
music royalties. Yeah, that he was part of. Yeah.
I've got a list here of people that have sold their stuff. So to give Todd a context, Bruce Springsteen. Okay, yeah. So Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen sold his catalog for $550 million. Just the music. Bob Dylan. Now this one is they said is iffy, somewhere between $300 million to $500 million, but he has more than 600 songs in his catalog. Paul Simon sold his, including Simon and Garfunkel stuff. Oh, they won't say how much. Neil Young, 1180 songs. I see there. Oh, but he sold his for a 50% take. So he sold 50% of the songwriting. David Bowie sold his stuff. Well, so Taylor Swift didn't sell her stuff. Her stuff was sold for her, but was for $300 million for Taylor Swift's catalog. Let's see. That's the only ones I'm seeing.
How can someone sell that under you? Like if Gene would have been one day, oh yeah, by the way, Gene, we sold your rights for a Kiss. Like, how does that work? How did they get away with that with Taylor Swift?
Well, she didn't own her music. With Taylor Swift, she didn't own her music.
Oh.
So she's been trying to get her music back. She actually put a bid in to buy her music back so she could own it. Yeah. So she does get songwriting credits on her songs, but she doesn't own the actual publishing rights. The publishing rights are owned, the people that own the masters to her music still own the masters to music. So she went out and re-recorded, not all of them yet, but most of her albums, she's re-recorded all of them. So now there's new masters and she owns those new masters and she's trying to get people to only listen to any of my songs if it says Taylor's version. So therefore the publishing rights on payment for her music is.
Sounds familiar.
What's that?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, like who else? Rat's done that.
Well, Kiss did it.
Yeah. Yeah, like on Smashes, Thrashes, and Hits.
No, they did it again after.
Yes, Sonic Boom.
And they tried to get radio stations to stop playing the original Rock and Roll All Night.
Yeah.
They tried to get all the radio stations to stop playing the original versions. And they were starting to play the new ones, and everyone's like, "What's this?" So people were complaining. So the radio station stopped. So they had to really tried to get people to stop listening, so Ace Frehley wouldn't get his songwriting royalty.
They even re-recorded Beth, which is which isn't even a, like it, for all intents and purposes,
yeah.
It's not a Kiss song because Peter wrote that with a whole bunch of other people, none of them including other members of Kiss. And they're still, and they re-recorded that one, right? Didn't they re-record that with Eric Singer? Because they knew they did it with Eric Carr. Because
it was still released as a Kiss record. It was still it was still released under Casablanca, right? It was still released under a Kiss.
Yeah.
So I was assuming Kiss would still have some sort of governing. So Gene's idea with getting Eric Carr to do it was exactly like you said.
Oh yeah.
Now, Eric, it's not like he was giving all the rights to Eric Carr.
It was no.
A Kiss.
He was giving it was the publishing.
Paul rights. Stanley.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would get everything, and Peter would get nothing. But again, no one bid it. No one bid on it. Nobody wanted to listen to it.
What a dick move to Eric Carr, though.
Absolutely.
And he's like, I don't want to do this. But it's like, You're a paid employee. Like, he was never a full member of the band, ever. The replacement drummer, Todd. He was never Eric Carr, the second drummer. He was a paid employee. No different than the road crew or the lighting, you know, the lighting crew. He was paid better than they were. But they said, okay, we need you to re-record Peter Criss's song and do the vocal because we want to get paid for his publishing. And you're going to sing it and you're just going to collect your salary because you get a yearly salary from us, because that's, I think, how he was paid, was a yearly salary. And that's it. Like, and then, so didn't he reach out to Peter Criss and ask him? I think he asked, like, Peter Criss, like, they're making me do it.
Yeah,
and he felt like shit.
He just wanted him to know that, like, it's not me.
Yeah,
they're making me do it. Like, don't hate me, please.
Yeah, and Peter Criss never had anything bad to say about Eric Carr ever.
No.
But
yeah, it's that whole same concept, you know, just re-recording it. And it's, I get why she's doing it for sure, but yeah.
Oh yeah, but I mean, it's working with her. People are refusing to play the original versions.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, love or hate Taylor Swift, she's making changes in the industry that need to be there. I don't know how long lasting these changes will be, because all the music industry is still telling Taylor Swift to go fuck herself. You know, you can't change the rules to the music industry. We run it. We make the money. Shut the fuck up. You know, stop trying to collect checks. Like they're still pushing hard against her. You know, it's unfortunate. Yeah. Like, there will be some changes, but they're not going to be as big as, you know, people expect them to be.
When you have someone that has powerful influence over that many people, they don't like that.
They hate that.
Scares.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because, I mean, the message she's sending to upcoming artists, you know, and what not to take and what to do and how to do things. Yeah, exactly. Record companies are not going to like that.
Nope. And they're going to push back, say, well, then you won't get signed. Sign this contract the way it is, or get out of town.
So yeah, $300 million Kiss sold their stuff. I thought that was
okay. So Todd, undervalued, overvalued. He hasn't. What do you think?
I mean, I agree. If it was just the music, definitely way overvalued.
Yeah.
But when you take the merch, like it's a movement. Kiss is a movement. It's not just the music. Like, it's a, if you went anywhere in the world and you said Kiss, yes. You go anywhere in the world and some other band out there, like the ones you were talking about, they may not know who that is. But Kiss has been such a big spectacle. And because they have the makeup, they stick out like a sore thumb. So it's hard not to remember them.
Yeah.
And the amount of bands that play their music, I mean, they're still keeping it alive. And a lot of people want to go see the shows. Like, how many other bands, like, what's that other band that you said that sold for $300 million or whatever? How many bands out there go out and play their music? Like, how much interest is there in that?
Yeah.
When you go to a Kiss show, it's almost like a circus. Like, you're going to a show. You're seeing the pyrotechnics. You're seeing makeup. You're seeing, you know, hanging from the ceiling. You're seeing the the flames. You're, you know, it's not just a, you know, cookie cutter you know, show from, you know, whatever. I mean, the music from other bands is definitely different. And some songs might be better. I don't know. But yeah, Kiss is like, especially the older stuff. Like as it went into the 2000s and stuff, the most memorable stuff was the older stuff. Just like any band that makes it big. It's usually the original stuff that they come out with. That's what people want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, the one thing I was wondering, like, how much of a gamble it is for that company, though, because if they are really planning on doing the hologram show, like with ABBA and stuff, I get it with ABBA because ABBA pulled out of the scene, and it's not like everyone got a chance to see ABBA.
Oh, that's for damn sure. Yeah.
Everyone's had a chance to see Kiss a gazillion times.
Yeah, and oversaturation. ABBA was undersaturated.
Yeah, you know, like we've talked about this before. The at one point, I wouldn't be that now probably, but at one point, maybe 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, one of the most successful tribute bands in the world was not Queen, it wasn't friggin' Pink Floyd. It was a Sublime tribute because they broke right after he died. No one got a chance to see them.
Yeah.
Except for people in California, right?
Yeah, so, that's true.
So just back to that, it's like, well, you know, how much are they really planning on selling the hologram show? Is that a risk? Will it work for rock and roll fans? You know, is it different than pop fans? So I'm curious to see how
here's some other parts of the of the details, because I've been talking to a lot of Kiss centric podcast people and stuff. So there's other things going on here. There is a biopic.
Yeah, I heard. Okay,
so there's that, and then there's other tangential things. So it's not just the catalog. It's not just the hologram show. There's going to be a movie. There's going to be. I'm assuming just because of Family Jewels, and because of Rockstar Supernova. So. Hear me out. So there was Rockstar Supernova, Rockstar NXS. Remember that show from, I don't know, was it 90s, 2000s, whatever it was? Now, conceptually, I always thought, wouldn't it have been interesting if Kiss show up on a show like that and pick the new members? And there's a whole audition process for each of the four members. And they play that out over a couple of seasons to pick the replacements to do a residency in Las Vegas or something. So I think there's reality television sort of things that are cheap production, but you put the Kiss name on it, all of a sudden, like the return on investment on reality TV is huge. It's massive. It doesn't matter what it is, but you put Kiss's name on it, all of a sudden the return on investment's even higher. So I think there's going to be lots of things like that we see, but never mind. But the merchandising arm of it, like that alone, I think it's undervalued.
Yeah. Well, and there's a whole thing that so we haven't spoken since I went into November to do our last Love Guns tribute show. Did it do that?
No, we have not talked about that last one.
Okay. So like a lot of bands, it's always hard to sell in your hometown for some reason. And I noticed with the tribute bands, kind of same thing. So once your buddies all go get you, now again, that's in a small city, like Moncton. So every time we would draw like with a ticket, trying to get people to buy a ticket, it was never as good as it went other places. Now, if it was a free show, a municipal event, a car show, Canada Day, that kind of stuff, packed the place. But because it was more families, it was more kids, it was more of the event, you know. So we decided to take a chance on trying to do a show at the casino in New Brunswick. So it was really cool. Because we did really well as far as attendance goes, but I was staying in the hotel for a few days. We made it part of the package because I had to fly in from Calgary. Yeah. The show was in Moncton. So as I'm staying there, we do our sound check the day before. We're lucky we're able to do our load in sound check the day before, so we can take our time. So the day out, we just got to do a quick little line check, and everything's cool, and then no big stress. And so the whole time,
and that was a ticketed event then, right? It wasn't just a, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a regular, like the main event casino. Not a bar show. So we were kind of wondering what kind of attendance we were going to get, like as far as type of crowd. Right. So the whole time I'm there, I was there for 2 days. I'd see people with Kiss shirts, and I'd see a lot of younger kids, and I was always like, okay. But then I'd see there with their parents who are like our age. I'm like, okay, so did they like, you know, force Kiss on them, you know, as they were babies, and now they want to finally take them, or are they just really into themselves? How would they get into it? All these things are going through my mind. And of course they have no idea who I am. I'm just a guy in a ball cap and a hoodie. And,
you know, yeah.
So I questioned them throughout the weekend. We came in from so-and-so. Yeah, no, we're staying two nights. And so then,
Everyone you asked though, were they maritime people or was it beyond maritime? Times,
but rarely from Moncton. Of course, like we had a lot of like, you know, people we knew that were going.
Of course. Yeah. No,
but I was blown away from the end of the weekend by the amount of people that came in from out of town to come see the show. And like, not people I would expect. It really kind of showed me like that Kiss has really kind of broadened their grasp. It's not just rock and roll fans anymore. Yeah. So to get to the point I was saying, one concept I never really, really thought would have worked, and that weekend there proved it. Countless, countless 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old kids kiss shirt with their parents. So once I got, you know, like I said, I'd ask them and stuff, and how'd you get into Kiss? How'd you get into Kiss? And the amount of times that it was like, Kiss Scooby-Doo, Kiss Scooby-Doo.
Yep.
Kiss Scooby-Doo. I was like, what? Really? And honestly,
that is huge. That might be the biggest thing they did in the last 25 years.
Unreal. I kept hearing it all.
Kiss did an appearance on Scooby-Doo, recorded their absolute last song. What the hell was something about an ascot? Absolutely horrible. The last thing they recorded was a song about an ascot.
Yeah.
And their appearance on Scooby-Doo was fucking massive.
Yeah.
So
that was just it. It was just like, I never thought about that. Who would have actually thought that would have worked, like marketing to kids, you know? So that's a lot of it was. It was like, and half of them, and then I'd ask the parents, like, did you like this? No, like, they just want to come, like, you know? No. So they planted lots of seeds, what I'm getting at, that I never really thought much of, or I thought were terrible ideas. Because I remember when they did that to me, I was thinking like, yeah, they weren't really the most popular band at the time, and I was like, yeah, they're kind of grasping at straws.
Yes, here. Like, well, that's how I felt. Yeah,
we lost our older crowd. Let's try and get some younger for something, you know. But man, did it ever pay off in spades? Because at the end of the show, at the end of the show, we always take pictures with people if they want to, right? And this time here, we had a good idea since it was in a big casino room. We're like, well, why don't we do it in front of the stage? We can get them to line up all the way coming down to the front aisle, and then they can have the picture with the band in the background, right? The stage and all that. So we did that. The lineup was huge, and it was
so you were selling. You were selling the pictures then?
No, we just take pictures. Okay, we did the selling thing once, and it felt very Kiss. For one, and it just was a hassle, and we just kind of realized, yes, if this was 25 years ago, absolutely, why not? People would pay $5, $10 to get a good shot, but with what it can do for you with social media, like by letting those, let's say we took at least 50, 60 pictures after the show, all those people are going to post it online. They're going to tell their friends. They're going to.
Now this has a car show feel to it, like a convention feel to it, where everyone's getting pictures taken with, you know, the Ghostbusters thing.
The only thing is just us.
Yeah,
there was no other cars, right? Yeah. It was just us. That's what was cool. And all these kids stood in line to take pictures with us, even though they knew we weren't really Kiss, and they're generations away from Kiss and all that. But it was just so freaking cool to see parents who were Kiss fans bringing their kids out to see a Kiss show, the closest thing they could.
Yep.
Or
afford.
To see a Kiss show. Parents didn't like it. They just, you know, it's from Scooby-Doo. So many cool little things. So there's a few people I recognized that I saw in the elevator and all that. And then, and I told them that I was talking to you, like, this is where we're taking pictures. I've got my full suit on and they just saw the show. You know, I was the guy that they talked to you in the elevator with your mom. And then they'd look at me, you know? So it was really kind of cool that way. Yeah. Really neat. Forget what we're talking about that for, but yeah, there's that angle. So what is exactly what you're saying is that who knows what they've got planned.
Yeah.
Because there's so many other things aside from music that they've kind of already thought about that. Yep. I did hear about the movie.
What's that? Doug?
So this Scoopies thing, was this a specific song that was on there? Okay. And did you play that specific song?
No, it has nothing to do with the song. It's just that for some reason they were in the whole episode.
Okay.
In Scooby-Doo character, you know, cartoony,
let's just play it for a second here. This is just the song from it, just so Todd's got some context.
Yeah, totally. And it just like took off.
Oh no! No. Don't tug my ascot. Don't pull my ascot.
It's not a scot.
No, baby, you can't have my ascot, cause girl, it's mine.
Hands off my cravat. No, I don't like that.
Can't get it dirty.
Cravats are for Hellcats and this cat is feeling fine.
Oh, see, this is the cover.
We'll go out to a bistro and chat over creme brulee.
That's enough of that. That's horrible. That's the last Kiss song. You know what? If you guys did this song after Rock and Roll All Night in the encore,
you know what though? You know when that would be great at the very end when the lights are up, people are leaving,
yes,
kind of walking out.
Yeah, yeah.
That playing,
yeah.
All the lights are on. But yeah, so it was really cool just seeing, just. Yeah, regular guys in their work boots and moms and kids and going to see. Yeah, it was really neat. Because I really wasn't sure if the show would work. So I'm always like, when you're a fan of a band, and especially if you're doing a tribute band or you're involved on another thing on top of that, sometimes it's easy to lose grasp of reality of the artist you're portraying, of who. You know, how big are they actually? How many people can they actually bring in? What is their, you know, do people really like the song or do we really like the song? So sometimes I've kind of seen and kind of felt Kiss's popularity and people just not taking them serious.
Yeah.
Kind of hit back to like a late 80s kind of vibe, early 90s vibe before Revenge. And it's kind of taken off again, I think. Selling it, walking away like they did, whatever, they probably drug on a little more than they needed to, but at least they're not carrying on any longer, and we'll see. I'm excited to see, I guess, long story short, because I wasn't excited about Kiss anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm really kind of excited to see what they're going to do. I'm excited for Kiss again in the same way. Good reference, Todd. I'm excited with Kiss again the same way I was excited again when I heard that Disney was buying Star Wars. I knew it could go south. But yeah. I also knew that they would probably do a good job, which I think they've done a pretty bang on job pretty much so far.
I'm in the throes of Star Wars fandom right now. Like, I'm more excited about Star Wars now than I've been, I guess, since they released episode one. Cause like the stuff that Dave Filoni's doing with Star Wars, it's like, I thought they derailed with the, episodes like 7, 8, 9. Like, I'm like, I mean, there was good in there, but it wasn't the same thing. But the stuff they're doing with Ahsoka and some of those shows is like, shit. I'm like, I'm actually excited about Star Wars again.
Honestly, I'm same thing. It was like to me.
Same as Kiss.
To me, when they did 1, 2, and 3, especially 2, that was like hot in the shade, man. I was like, no, you guys are killing me
hot
here.
In the Come shade. On,
I'm trying to hang
what
on
a
here.
Good analogy.
And then they kind of pulled it out with the again. Like the Disney movies are still good. They still have some, you know, but what they've done since, like,
yeah.
Mandalorian to me is just like the ultimate. If you're a vintage Star Wars fan, it's got it all.
But what I want to say about that, and just give Todd some kind of something to cling on to, is Sylvie's never liked Star Wars, ever. I've tried to get her to like it, you know, like, okay, let's watch the trilogy again. It's like, nah, I've already seen it. I don't need to see it again. Like, just no interest. But she watched The Mandalorian and she's like on fucking board. So yeah. I think there's that aspect of, if you hit it right and you like get good writers on. So if Kiss gets good writers on whatever the next project is, like the biopic movie or whatever it is, if you get the writers on board, you can breathe a whole new life and a whole new longevity to the brand, which is what, you know, Dave Filoni's running Star Wars now. And since he took over running Star Wars, which hasn't been that long, like his content is top notch.
Oh yeah.
So Kiss needs to have that visionary person in charge of that stuff. To get it to the, like, be good, about, like, make it good. Don't just put shit out. Make it, instead of, some of the quality has been lacking with Kiss in the last 25 years. But if you bring somebody good in who can do that, you know, then you got something.
The thing is the quality has been lacking because they've had their quality's been lacking because, like most musicians, when you get to a certain age, you run out of ideas, you lose interest. You're not a hungry 19-year-old like you were when you wrote all your best material. And it's just, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the way it is. But the problem is you're forced to put out material. No matter what you have or not, you have to put out a record.
Yeah.
So,
and they weren't doing that.
Because they were limited to the output that they could put in without, you know, they tried bringing songwriters, but it's just like, getting a professional songwriter to try and like write a Kiss song is probably really hard.
Yeah. but if you look at what Ace Frehley's been doing for the last 20 years, I think now there's hit and miss with Ace's stuff, but it's been more Kiss than Kiss has been, I guess.
Well, exactly. The thing is, Ace has no pressure.
No.
Right?
None.
So he can just keep writing Ace Frehley songs. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
And like it's all come out now that the producer that did his last album played a lot of the stuff on it.
Oh, you mean the new Trickster album? I mean the new Ace Frehley album?
Yeah. And it's like, still though, okay, and that just reinforced my point I just said. It's still easier. I could probably do that. I bet you I could write two or three Ace Frehley songs.
Sure.
And they would be good because they're Ace Frehley songs. I just got to follow the pattern. Just
like
you write AC/DC songs. Just writing Kiss songs, how do you do that? How would you pinpoint, if you're a songwriter who works on formulas and there's no formula to good Kiss songs? All the big Kiss songs were like Detroit Rock City, totally different. I Was Made for Loving You, totally different. Forever, totally different. Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
There's no set formula to all their
big hits. But you know what, like the way Dave Filoni did Star Wars is, okay, we know it worked before. Let's talk about a Boba Fett guy, Boba Fett looking guy, and just put him in the world. So what if they did songs in the Kiss world that still have the, like, I think it's kind of, there's a reimagining of how to do that the way they did with Star Wars.
But it's back to what I was saying is Ace is okay with being Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
Kiss is not okay with being old Kiss.
No.
They're not okay with being.
But they're not okay with being new Kiss either.
Well, I think they're not okay with being new Kiss because it didn't work. I think if they would have had their way, Ace Frehley and Peter Criss never would have had a reunion with them. I think if they would have had their way, they never would have had the makeup on as long as they did. They would have done it that one time, did their cash cow, and all their new music would have sold, and everyone would have told Genie's the best songwriter in the world. But it didn't work that way. They put up with that because it was the only way, like, to keep going and to get as big as they always wanted. So it's a different thing. But back to your reference, yes, exactly. Filoni's doing the same thing. He knows it works for Star Wars fans. He knows what they want. The exact same thing. Lisa, I got her to watch the entire Star Wars trilogy, and she liked it. She thought it was cool, but she's never asked to
do it again. But she didn't love it.
She didn't love it. She thought it was really cool. but she didn't love it, you know. But the Mandalorian ones we've watched twice. She even liked the Boba Fett one. Mm-hmm. She enjoyed that. We just watched Ahsoka. She liked that. Not as much, but she still liked it. The Obi-Wan, she liked that. She thought it was really good.
Oh, yeah. Sylvie loved Obi-Wan, yeah.
Yeah.
Boba Fett, so she didn't like.
They figured out how to make it Star Wars, but make it appealing and still keep it Star Wars.
But make it really fresh and new, too, because they're doing new things. You know, and so they figured out how to do it. What's that?
I hope that company does that with Kiss. I hope they find cool ways of, again, you can't beat the horse, just do some different stuff, you know?
So I read up on when they did the ABBA stuff, like the ABBA hologram. They've probably made, ABBA made more money off the two Mamma Mia films and the hologram than they ever made as a band.
So they get a cut of this hologram.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I guarantee you there's no way that Gene's walking away from all future Kiss things.
No, it's $300 million is the starting money.
Yeah.
And then there's all the back end stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, it's whenever they want to do that, like, and when they say they made that much money, it's funny you said that. We were just watching a movie the other night. Mel Gibson was in it. So Lisa and I were just like there's a newer one with him in it. And I just talked about like how much money he's made over the years. So I just went and looked at his net worth and I was pretty shocked. And I was like, well, how do you make that much money? And then it showed like his divorce was like hundreds of millions of dollars and he still has all this money. Well, that Passion of Christ movie that he did, Well, he did that all on his own dime. Yep. He made between $120 and $150 million off that one movie. And he didn't even act in it.
Yep.
Crazy, eh?
Yep. He directed it, and that was it, right?
Yeah, he directed it, and seems to me...
And financed it.
His company, he did the whole... Yeah, that's why he gambled everything to make it all.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's just, 100% goes to show. Even like I've noticed, I'd love to see the numbers. I've noticed that I Was Made for Loving You has been in a lot of movies lately.
Yep.
And that's where you make money is in movies.
Yeah, way more bank than playing on the radio.
Oh, yeah. So I'd be curious to see how much money that song's made in the last 10 years versus the first 10 years.
Now, look how much money it's going to make from now on. Not just that song, but there's a few songs that can skirt that, you know, that side. There's a few of the Paul ballads that, oh, you know what, that rom-com, if we, every time I look at you, we'll stick that in the next, you know.
And don't forget, like, as much as Gene Simmons wants to pretend that he's a businessman, and he is, that's not what I'm saying, but like, he's not a businessman at heart.
No.
He's a kid that grew up with nothing and wants to take over the world and be popular.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So a lot of people probably wouldn't deal with Gene Simmons, but would deal with this company.
Yes.
A lot of people wouldn't deal with a rock band from America, but will deal with a European company that is involved in this and that.
Yeah.
That count with them. And, you know, so that's a whole other thing too. Like, I'm wondering, it's not like they sold to a record label, or it's not like they sold to Paul McCartney. You know, it's someone that's not in, like, it has a totally different hand in the cookie jar, right? So I'm curious to see, you know.
It'd be interesting to see. I know I won't go see the hologram tour.
No.
I mean, I haven't seen them the last 37 times they've been through, you know. I've seen them a whole schwack of times, and the last concert I saw was the Psycho Circus one, and I've had no need to go back since.
No,
Although I heard on the Kiss Cruise, they played without makeup, and they were pulling gems out, and apparently that was awesome, and Paul actually sounded good. So, I don't know.
He could probably pick songs that, part of the problem is that it's like part of the problem is that Paul's voice is going, and a lot of the hits he has to sing are at the peak of a 35-year-old man's voice, and it's never going to be the same ever again after, right? So if he was allowed to play the songs that he wanted to for his voice,
yeah,
I'm sure it'd be a lot different of a set list. Yeah. So anyway, crazy.
Crazy nights. Sorry.
Anyway, I know that turned into a long discussion about Kiss.
But, that's good.
It wasn't just about Kiss. I was just curious of what you guys thought about the whole. Again, it's something bands have done before, but not like this. This is going to be different. This is going to be so different than ABBA.
Yeah.
So different than that. Because they have a kids' market too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like what Mama Mia did for ABBA in terms of global popularity was bigger than anything else, because it made ABBA family friendly. It was this older generation with this younger generation, and this middle generation was all in that movie, and that alone expanded the brand. So if they do the same thing with Kiss, it's like Kiss is already all over the place.
Oh,
right. So if they can even further expand that to 5-year olds, you know, or whatever, like, you know,
a hologram show of ABBA fits certain places.
Yeah.
A hologram show of Kiss, of a Kiss concert, that can be at Disney World. That can be at a fair. That could be at Canada's Wonderland. That can tour around. You know what I mean? Like that can, it could be.
The potential is bigger than ABBA, actually, because ABBA's only playing in one venue in England, and that's it. That's it. It's making a shit ton of money at one venue in England with regular showings, like a museum. So I don't know. The potential is way bigger.
I have one quick insider nugget to say that I thought was pretty cool. So I met someone. So I play, as I told you before, I play lead guitar in a local Elton John tribute band.
Yeah.
And the Elton John guys, super Elton John fan, of course, and he knows a lot of the Elton John tributes around the world, just through correspondence, of course, not personally. Yeah. And he was playing a gig in Edmonton. And Edmonton's the capital of politician people there. Anyhow, he met someone who had hired Elton John. This obviously uber rich person. His daughter wanted Elton John to play her wedding. So he hired Elton John to come play one song at the wedding. Guess how much?
Ooh, 100 grand?
In the millions, probably. Million?
$1 million.
For one song.
One song. I'm gonna show and it wasn't like I'll show up and I'll hang out. It's like I'm gonna show up at this hour. You need to have this type of grand piano. You need to have all this blah 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 blah. Fly in. Okay, not
all expense. The stay, the food,
yeah.
Airfare, and like all the
you walk in, play the song. Hello, blah blah blah. Walk out. It was an hour. He made. It was not more than an hour total. $1 million. You want me that bad? I'm gonna give you a ridiculous price, and if you're stupid enough to pay it, then fine, I'll show up.
You know, I know this is
needs the $1 million. Like,
yeah, but it's the principle. Like, this is my set price. You know.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought it was interesting. Our cousin Monette. Like she gets flown out. Like she was getting flown out. Oh, we need someone to sing at the funeral, at this funeral or that funeral. They fly her out and they pay everything.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And they, you know, hotel, food, whatever, you know, and because then the appearance fee.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
Kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure, man. Again, if it's not like he wanted to go play a stranger's wedding on a Sunday afternoon. He's retired. He's old.
Yeah.
If you want to get me off of my throne, literally my throne, I want $1 million.
And then someone's like, okay.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What was the name of that show? It kind of brought back that Journey song, Don't Stop Believing. What was the name of a show? It was all singing.
That pop. Oh, a Glee.
Glee.
Yeah.
So that kind of brought that music back. Because when Glee came out, it was like, oh, yeah, well, listen to all these songs. It says, yeah, well, these aren't the originals. Listen to the original one.
Yeah.
But the amount of money they made, all those bands made off of their songs being on Glee, Like, never mind, like, the publishing or whatever, publishing fee or whatever you call it, for it being in the episode. There's that fee. But then there's the reciprocal, okay, who is this band? And people searching this out. And then suddenly it gets shown in movies. Like, the, you know, the Glee effect on a lot of bands was huge.
Oh, it's
like,
yeah.
It's like a tiller going through the garden. Okay, well, let's bring it back to the surface.
Yeah.
Bring it all back up again. And I'm sure with Kiss, that they're probably, that's what they're going to do. They're going to do something.
Oh, yeah.
That's like you were saying, like with INXS or that whole thing that they had when they were trying to find band members. Same idea. I think they did the same thing with a couple different bands, didn't they? Or was it just INXS?
Well, they did Rockstar. INXS was the first season. And then the second was a super group thing.
Yeah.
And
Queen. Yeah, Queen.
Yeah, they did Queen too. Yeah.
Yeah. But then there was Rockstar Supernova, and it was like, wasn't it like Tommy Lee?
It was like, wasn't it like Jason Newsted, Ted Nugent?
That was another one. That was a lesser show. Okay. But there was another, like the second season of Rockstar was called Supernova. And it was like, what's the guy with from Jane's Addiction, the guitar player, Dave Navarro He was in there. And Tommy Lee.
Astora, maybe? Oh, Tommy Lee, yeah.
Yeah, it was like basically, you know, but and that went nowhere. But then the other one was the one with Sebastian Bach and Ted Nugent. And Scott Ian, who plays in everyone's band.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's a new AC/DC guitar player, right?
Is he for real?
Yeah, he's replacing whatever Malcolm's nephew was there.
Malcolm's nephew's out too then.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Scott Ian's playing rhythm guitar.
Interesting.
And Scotty and Duff's playing bass.
Duff?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. So how many original members are all not
it's
even
just gonna be Angus and Brian.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know, wait, who
isn't there,
who's playing?
Was Phil Rudd on drums or was he out? I can't remember.
Yeah, no, he's in, seems to me. Yeah, he's in. Yeah.
Because he was out and he was back or something. I can't remember. I'm not
some sort of gangster charge against
him or something. Yeah. Todd saw AC/DC on their reunion on their what tour was that, Todd?
This was
when they put that new album out a few years ago.
Black Ice or Rock or the train.
There was a train song.
Yeah,
Rock it was the last. It was the last tour when the singer before they pulled him.
Yeah,
because it was hearing. So that was that was the last time we saw him. We were in the front.
I saw that tour too.
That was awesome.
Yeah,
the big bells coming out like. Right over your head almost.
Golly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw them at the Pope site in Moncton at Magnetic Hill.
Oh. Nice. Pope Hill.
Yeah. It's a great show. Great show, man. There was like almost 100,000 people there. It was pretty nuts.
Jeez. Oh yeah, in Moncton, like you can pull those numbers in Moncton because everybody comes from everywhere. Probably even like the New England States people will drive in, you know, for a show like that.
Totally. Absolutely.
It's not that far. Yeah. People from Maine and
especially stuff. When you're making money, when your dollar's worth more, then great, great tour. But yeah, Scotty. And so it's more like, I just thought of that because of what we're talking about, like celebrity supergroups. It's kind of like what AC/DC is up to almost now.
Yeah. It seems it was Sabbath too, right? It's not all the original guys on the last Sabbath tour, right? Like
just the drummer. It was just the drummer that was.
Geezer was there, or was he?
Oh no, Geezer was there. Yeah,
was he? Okay,
absolutely. Yeah, no, it's just Bill Ward.
No, I'm thinking Judas Priest. That's who I was thinking of because they've lost more than a couple, I think.
Yeah. No, they've gone through a few guys.
Although the new album's pretty rip-roaring good.
I heard it's really good. I haven't heard it yet.
It they said it's probably the best thing they've done in like the album before everyone, it got critical rave reviews, and this one is even better. Like people are like, how can they put out, you know, music like this now? But I don't know. And Rob can still sing, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, he knows how to, so.
Yeah. He's doing it the right way, right? He's always doing it the right way. He knows what he's doing. All right. We should cap it there. It's being Todd's bedtime.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice talking to you again for sure.
Yeah.
Took too long to get here. I apologize, but
shit's been
all over the place.
Absolutely.
So next time you come on though, I want to do something a bit more theme related. So spinning the wheel or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And just like shoot the shit, pull something off the wheel and shoot the shit about it.
Sounds good.
All right. So, social media, just Facebook, right? Danny Rocks. Yeah. Danny Rocks or Danny Roy? Danny Roy.
Danny Roy. Danny Roy. Rocks, my intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And where can you find us, Todd? Todd, where do you find us?
At SeanMcGinnity.ca. That's SeanMcGinnity.ca.
Ribbed for your pleasure. Sexiest man in podcasting. I don't care what anybody else says. Because someone is trying to claim your throne, Todd. So we gotta, nip that in the bud.
Okay.
Or get someone to nip your bud. Whatever. However that works. All right. I'm gonna stop the recording.
Recording stopped.
There you go. Awesome.
All right.
That's good.
Oh, it's only Monday.
Yeah, it's only Monday.
I go for a colonoscopy on Friday.
Oh, no way.
Oh, good for you. Yeah.
Sounds like fun. You didn't mention that.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, no, I didn't.
Next episode, we might have to talk about it, Todd.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, crazy. Doctor's like, oh, how old are you? Oh, we got to sit you up. No, you don't.
Sit you up? Do. What do you mean sit you up?
Well, once you're past 50, it's like, okay, we got to check your inside. So,
Yep.
Yeah. Stuff I got to go back. Yeah. Been a while. My doctor got me to start after 40. It's like, why? He's like, well, he's like, just, you never know. I was like, all right, true.
So, okay, so you've gone through it.
Yes.
So are you totally out?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I don't have to go and like feel everything. It's like, oh, you're running the corner.
No.
I'm out.
I didn't realize they knocked you out because I've had the whatever, the up the butt, whatever, but I haven't had the colonoscopy.
Yeah.
Well, if you're knocked out, then it's not that big a deal.
No.
Yeah. I just bought that jug of powder and the pills.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yay.
Wow. That sounds like a good topic.
Guys are getting old.
Yeah, that'll. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I guess we talk about everything else. I don't see what.
Oh. And that's why people come tune into our show.
This is what you're going to expect.
Yeah.
This is what I thought I was going to expect. And this is what actually happened. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should book.
Cool. Well, that was awesome, guys.
Yep.
Yep.
So keep us apprised of the May project and how it goes along. And if you want me to, I could show you where to go change the setting. As if I remember how to do it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because that'll be helpful for your classes as well too. Like,
if you go to the bottom left where your microphone is in that little arrow.
Oh, hang on.
As you click on that.
Bottom.
You're on your phone, right?
I'm on my iPad. Same idea.
Okay, same idea. Yeah, on the where the microphone is in the bottom left, there's a up arrow next to the microphone, and that'll get you into your audio settings.
Yeah, and at the very bottom, audio settings. You click on that, and that's what brings up the audio profile at the bottom.
I don't have a microphone on the bottom, like you said.
Yeah, I think on the iPad works like the iPhone. So then the minute you swipe everything, you don't see us anymore, right?
I see it now. So there's a microphone. mute.
It's wherever your setting, like wherever your settings are. I don't know if the Apple works a bit different, but it's wherever your settings are.
Captions, meeting settings. Topic. Oh yeah. Okay. Here, what's going on here?
So it should break it out into when you're in your settings. There should be a video, an audio, a share screen, a team chat, a whole bunch of different types. And then there's the one called audio is the one you want to be messing with. Audio and then audio profile. And then there's something called specifically called background noise suppression. Low was the one, right, Todd?
Yeah. Low.
Yeah. It literally, that's all you got to change. Because the standard is Zoom background noise removal is the default.
And mine's on auto. So you switch it from auto to low and then you should be good.
It's literally, okay. That's all you got to do.
Cool.
That's okay, it. Okay, cool. That's literally it.
Well, that's going to make a big difference.
Well, help for teaching. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
But then also help for if, like, if you want to jam, if you have an idea, like a music idea with one of your buddies that isn't there, you could just share it over, you know, it goes like this and you can hold your guitar up and just play it and they'll hear what you're doing.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah. No, I didn't even think about that.
Well, we were forced to do it last time with that band because they were like dead set on performing live. And it's like, we've never done that before. We don't know how to do it. We figured it out. And it's like, that's all you got to do. Are you freaking kidding me? It's that easy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Easy. All right, cool. Okay.
All right. Awesome.
I'll let you go. I'll give you a heads up when this goes out.
Yeah, for sure. A
couple of weeks, I think, usually is the norm, and it'll be a two-parter for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Great then.
Okay.
Cool. See you later.
Awesome,
guys. Yeah, talk to you later. Bye.
Later.
Bye. You should.
For listening, and we'll see you next week, and bye. Have a good day.
Hey gang, Sean Geek here,
and Fast Fret,
and we have two storefronts. If you are a T Public fan, you can browse our inventory over at T Public, which is tpublic.com/Sean Geek Podcast
or redbubble.com/people/Sean Geek Podcast.
You can get anything from either storefront, from t-shirts, stickers, phone cases, accessories of all kinds. We're talking masks, notebooks, mugs, pillows, totes, tapestries.
Oh my.
Oh my. Everything's there. Just go to those addresses. Also check the show notes and help support the show. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.